Thank you, Sandy. All right, guys, Sandy asked me to come talk to you today about herbicide resistance with a focus on glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth. You've got another speaker coming up after me that'll address some other issues. But really, before I get into the glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth, I want to take an opportunity just to remind you. Herbicide resistance is certainly not new, and it's certainly not only impacting us. As we know, there are at least 110 broadleaf weeds and 73 grass weeds that have herbicide resistance across the world. And they're resistant to many different classes of herbicide chemistry. Now, what has the greatest impact? Well, if you're a specific farmer and you've got a specific weed resistant to a specific herbicide, that's the greatest problem that you've got. But I think if you look across, especially the Cotton Belt, but across the United States, clearly the weeds with resistance to glyphosate pose the greatest threat to our ability to produce the crops that are so valuable to us. Now, with that said, we'll start focusing on the glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth because, at least in my opinion and in the part of the world that I am in, this pest clearly is having the greatest impact on our ability to produce all of our agronomic crops and, most importantly, at least to Georgia, our cotton crop. In 2004, we had one county in one state where we had known glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth. Now, sure, it was in many other areas, most likely. But at least at that time, it was one county to be confirmed in 2004. Now, if you look in 2008, you can see it's in six, seven, or eight states and a significant number of counties. Now, when you start thinking about this, several things come to mind. First of all, the populations in Georgia are independent of, say, those in Arkansas or those in North Carolina. So we've got different populations that have developed resistance throughout the Cotton Belt. But also, if you look, for example, more closely to the state of Georgia, we have a significant problem with rapid spread of this pest. Now, this is a slide that I want to drive several things home to some of you guys. If you look in 2004, we had one county that we confirmed it in. 2005, two, and then seven in 2006, 10 in 2007. And now in 2008, I've screened four of our counties. They all four had resistance. I got about 20 more to go, and I would be surprised if all 20 of those don't have resistance. So the point here is for you guys who don't have resistance, it's a matter of time. You will have resistance. So it's very, very important for you, and you have an opportunity to do things that we don't have since we already have it. But the ability of this pest to spread is very unique compared to most other weedy pests. And that leads to my first question for your participation today. In your opinion, what is likely the primary method of resistance palm amaranth spread? Is it birds? Is it you and I with equipment? Is it when we're spreading litter or gym trash? Is it pollen? Is it weed scientists because they don't have nothing else to do? Or is it water? And I want to say several of the questions I'm going to ask you throughout today while you're answering, a lot of them don't necessarily have a right or wrong answer. My whole objective is to make you think and start to look at things in a little different way, because this weedy pest will do that for you. I really hope it's not E. Oh, how interesting. And again, everything I do, I always learn. So, equipment was number one. Interestingly, pollen was number two. And again, I don't know that I know the answer, but I want to take an opportunity to explain to you some of the research we've done to maybe help you understand why spreading is occurring. And for those of you who marked pollen, I am in agreement with you. Not saying the equipment is not extremely critical, but I want to show you some of the results and some of the data we've generated in trying to understand pollen movement and how resistance can move through that pollen movement with this specific weedy pest. Now, if you have Palmer amaranth, you have a male plant and a female plant, which is called dioecious. Male plants on one plant and female parts on another plant. The goal of the male plant and its livelihood is to produce pollen. The goal of the female is to produce seed. And they are both very, very good at what they do. I only wish I was as good as they were. So the question is, can resistance, say from a field where you know you have resistance, can that resistance travel in that pollen into areas where you don't currently have resistance? And if they can, will they then come into a field that was previously not infested but become a significant issue? Well, once we saw some things occurring in 2004 and 2005, we felt like it was very important to understand pollen movement. So we went in to a South Georgia field. It's about a 100-acre field. And in the center of that field, we planted resistant male plants. And this is a county that had resistance, so we weren't traveling it or spreading it or anything. So the weed scientist thing wasn't involved. And then out in every direction, we planted female plants that were sensitive to glyphosate. So resistant male plants in the center, sensitive female plants all the way out to 300 meters. And we did this for 2 years in a row. Now, I call this, every time I do a county meeting in Georgia, I show this. This is a complicated slide, but it's a crystal ball of our past and many of your futures. What you're looking at along is you're looking at the percent resistant offspring per parent plant. And what this is showing you at a distance of 1 meter, if that female, again, sensitive plant, one you could kill with glyphosate, was 1 meter away from those resistant plants, about 60% of her progeny, even though you could kill her, you can't kill her progeny. Now, if you go out to 300 meters, which is what, close to 1,000 feet or so, which is much, much, much further than we had ever anticipated, about 20% of her progeny will be resistant to glyphosate at enormous rates. If you look at that study, along with some other work Dr. Sosnowski has done at the University of Georgia, and you're a farmer in the state of Georgia, because this will depend on humidity, on all different kinds of weather environments, heat, nighttime temperature, daytime temperature, humidity, etc., how tall the palm amaranth is. But if you're in my state and you've got a 6 foot tall female plant, or male plant and female plant, and you have a typical wind of 10 to 15 miles an hour, we definitely expect resistance will move at least 1/4 mile from the site where that pollen originated and transfer that pollen to sensitive plants. And the other thing that's interesting in the state of Georgia is we don't have a directional flow. For example, we thought it would be always southeast, but it didn't matter if it was northeast, southwest, what direction in our state, because our winds change so much, 1/4 mile from that site in any direction increases that spread. Now again, many, many factors impact the potential spread. It may not be the same for Texas and North Carolina as it is for the state of Georgia, but clearly this research has explained how the number of counties where we're finding resistance is essentially doubling every single year. So it's very critical that you understand pollen movement. It's very critical that you look at your neighbor and say, hey, what are you doing? Because it impacts what I am doing. My second question for you guys. A Palmer amaranth male plant can produce at least 250,000 seed per plant. Now, this one does have a right or wrong answer. Most of them, they don't have right or wrong. This one does have a right or wrong. I had to stick this one in here. Just curious if y'all are paying attention. Can I start over? I am reading that right. 28% saying true, 72% saying false. All right, so 72% of you are absolutely correct. A male plant produces the pollen. The female plant produces the seed. So in response, that would it'd been nice if it was 92%, but at least we're getting there. Male plant, pollen, female plant, seed. Now, how many seed can a female plant produce? A female seed, a female plant is very good at what it does. If you dig up some of the literature, it varies a great deal. But some of the work that came out of California showed anywhere from 200 to 600,000 seed can be produced by a single female plant. The 200,000 generally came if the palmer emerged late in the year, 600,000 if the palmer emerged early in the year. So the more of the growing season it has, the more productive it's going to be. In our state, when we competed with cotton in a cotton crop, we had a single female that can produce up to 450,000 seed per plant. So when you start thinking about, oh, pollen moves in 20% of the progeny, 20% of 450,000 seed, you have 1 to 2 years or you're going to get left behind, because palmer amaranth will absolutely dominate your landscape. Here's just an indication. If you look at the more common resistant weeds to glyphosate in the U.S., from giant ragweed to Johnson grass to horseweed to water hemp to palmer amaranth, the amaranthus species, whether it's water hemp or palmer amaranth, have a significant ability to reproduce, and this gives them definitely an advantage when they're establishing in an area. All right, another question for you guys. Palm amaranths can grow up to X inches per day. Quarter inch, half inch, 1 inch, 2 inch, or 4 inches. How fast can that palm amaranth grow? So when you're thinking about problematic weeds, think about the factors that I'm hopefully leading you through. We talked about the pollen movement. Then we talked about seed production. And now we're going to talk just a little bit about the growth of this pest. And think about all these factors and how challenging it is to manage when you can't control it with one of the most effective herbicides on the planet any longer. Okay, that's very interesting. Now this is one of those answers that I think at least four-fifths of the answers are correct. Growth is going to be obviously dependent on the time of the year and the environment it's in. For example, if you're in the southeast and we're planting in April, a quarter inch might be as fast as it's going to grow. But anywhere from a quarter inch to D down to 2 inches has been documented with growth. And I'm certainly not saying it can't grow 4 inches. I haven't seen that. But if you look at what we have documented, and some information we actually had the EPA with us when we were documenting this, in a 52-hour period in South Georgia, palm amaranth was able to grow 4 inches, so 2 inches per day. Now, when you think about a recommendation myself or extension or you as consultants make, and you leave 48 hours later, or really 24 hours later, your recommendation might be absolutely useless. And that poses a great challenge to this weed. Most other weeds aren't like this, but that poses a great challenge to us. Now, at the same time we documented essentially 2 inches per day, what I thought was more interesting, interesting at least for me while I'm sleeping, is overnight, over 12 hours during night, while you and I are sleeping, that palm amaranth is still growing. So again, your ability to control this pest with a post-emergence herbicide is challenged because of its unique ability to grow extremely rapidly. Again, it grows slow at some times of the year, but when environmental conditions are favorable, it's going to be hard to outgrow this plant. Obviously, with rapid growth means we miss with a lot of our post-emergence herbicides to control this plant, and you end up with extremely large plants. As you can see, Dr. York over on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side is one of my county agents. That county agent is 6 foot tall, and he is not on his knees. And that is the world in which we live. It's a significant challenge. The impact on the cotton crop itself is significant. Cotton is, as most of you already know, is more sensitive to weed, most of the time more sensitive to weed competition compared to a soybean or a corn. And in our part of the world, 2 plants per 20 row feet will reduce your yield 23%. And that's even with Delta Pine 555, which I think is arguably one of the more rapid, aggressively growing cotton cultivars you could have. Now, in addition to impacting your ability to produce a crop, you obviously impact the productivity of the spindles and everything else you got on that cotton picker if you actually are willing to pick your fields. Now, unfortunately, in the southeast, that I'm much more familiar with, from Georgia up into the Carolinas, this is not an uncommon sight. People think you go out and pick specific fields to take a picture of. This, unfortunately, is very, very common in 4 to 5 of my counties, as well as some areas in South Carolina and North Carolina. But the impact that you're seeing on that crop, on that cotton harvest, and on harvesting efficiency is huge. But also what you're seeing is a significant amount of those seeds that are being produced that you're going to fight and your children are going to fight. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to find some weaknesses on this plant. So far you've seen there are no weaknesses. There are very few plants that can even compete with this one at all. But I have a question for you. Palm amaranth commonly emerges from below a depth of 4 inches. So again, you have to know your species. For example, nutsedge can emerge as much as 10 or 12 inches deep. Where does palmer come up from, or predominantly come up from? Is it above 4 inches or below 4 inches? All right. 80% of you said it was false, that it emerges, it does not. Palm amaranth commonly emerges below a depth of 4 inches, and that would be false. Now, out of all the work that we've done, this is the first potential positive light. And let me share with you why I think it's potentially a positive light. If you look at some of Keeley's research, essentially most of it emerged in the top inch. 7% came up at about 2 inches and less than 2% after that. If you look at all work, whether you got resistant palm amaranth or sensitive palm amaranth, it did not matter. But essentially, you're seeing nearly all of ours is emerging in the top inch. Now, why is this important? Again, if you're going to fight a battle, you got to know what you're fighting. And so far, everything we've learned, we haven't found a weakness in palm amaranth until possibly now. Now, we love conservation tillage, but this is challenging our productivity for sure. If you do not use a herbicide and you just look at the ability of breaking the land, you can see the impact that we can have on the populations. Again, because if you're capable of breaking that land and putting that seed down at a depth that the pigweed will not emerge, you can at least reduce the populations for that time period. Now, it's obviously important, everything you do when you fight this pest, if you don't know what you're doing, it's going to tell you and it's going to show you. If you're just moving soil side to side, you'll have streaks of plants. If you're not completely flipping that soil to get those pigweed seeds at least 4 inches below ground, you will not be effective. But if you do that, and then you adopt one of the programs that one of us extension generally recommend, we have a whole lot better opportunity of being successful. Many of the programs recommended are good, but when you have 100 plants per square yard, 95% control still equals a disaster. So what we have to work on is we have to work on the seed bank and getting the seed bank at a respectable level that these typical weed management programs can be successful. All right, one other question. Palmer amaranth seed live how long in the soil? 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, or we simply do not know. And again, what you can see is we have been frustrated with our ability to control this with herbicide programs, so we have got to find some integrated approach to manage this pest. And this is where we're looking, the biology of the pest. Awesome, guys. You get an A, because I think it's unknown as well. I will tell you there is just a little bit of research out there, but as of today, I think you guys are right on. One study by Minguez and some others showed that they could reduce palm amaranth seed banks 98% in 6 years with hand weeding and herbicides. But there's really no literature out there that says how long that seed is viable in that soil. Many of us are now doing that research throughout the belt, and we're only a year or so in, as well as some of my colleagues. So I think you're absolutely right. Today we don't know. In 3, 4, 5 years we absolutely will know. If you look at some of our preliminary information, and what you're doing is you're looking at percent viability. Obviously on day zero we've got 100% viability, but by a 9 months period you can see some of our populations at various depths have lost 30% of their viability. So again, the goal here, just like the breaking of the land or understanding where a palmer emerges, is can we reduce these populations to get them at levels that they're manageable? Can we fight the ability of this female to produce 400,000 and 500,000 seed apiece? Can cover crops be used? Can cover crop residue can reduce palmer amaranth populations? Yes or no? True or false? So we've talked about breaking the land. We've talked about different tillage implements. Can we go the other route? Can we go to conservation tillage? Can we use cover crops to manage palm amaranth? At least they hadn't fallen asleep. Okay, kind of a mixture. So 60% of you think cover crop residue can be used. About 40% of you think it can. Well, my response to you is you're both potentially right. It depends on the operator that you're working with. Now, you can use cover crop mulch to absolutely reduce the amount of palmer amaranth that emerges in your field. There's no doubt we can show significant reductions. Here, a 32-inch wheat crop. If you leave that residue out there, you can improve control by reducing the amount of palmer amaranth there. In fact, if you have cover crops with significant amount of mulch, like a rye cover crop, we can reduce the amount of palmer amaranth that emerges by 70% or more. So it can be done, but it's done in specific management ways where you produce significant amount of cover. Here's just an example of a solid soil applied and post-emergence weed control program in the southeast. And you're looking at the difference between a wheat cover and a rye cover. And the benefit here is simply the mulch. The mulch can be used to reduce that germination. The challenge is you're potentially in no man's land. So you know you need residual herbicides to control Palmer amaranth. You know you can use mulch to reduce Palmer amaranth emergence, but you also know that that mulch will absolutely reduce the potential of that herbicide to get into the soil to give you that activity. And that's why I say in some aspects you're both potentially right, that it is a challenge. So if you're going to use mulch, and we're trying to do everything we can to preserve conservation tillage because this pest does threaten it so greatly, we've got to move to a system where we essentially are using the mulch effect to reduce soil temperature, to reduce light, which reduces germination. Now, no matter what you do in my part of the world where you have a hard pan, you've got to run a ripper, so we've got to till up a small area in that conservation tillage production program. And when you do that, you absolutely will get pigweed emerging. You can see the impact from the mulch. There's very few Palmer amaranths coming through the mulch, but where we had to open that land up to get the seed in to run the ripper, we have a tremendous population of Palmer amaranth. So you are still dependent on residual herbicides, and you're still dependent on residual herbicides being activated by rainfall, which is a severe challenge in some parts of our world. Now, I don't want you to leave here thinking, no, Palmer will never come through a mulch, because it absolutely will come through a mulch. But in a picture like this, where you've got one plant's coming through a significant rye cover crop, if without the rye cover crop, it would be 50 or 60 plants in conventional tillage. So again, my goal today is to somewhat make you think. If you're in a situation where you don't have resistance, cover crops can be used to reduce the amount of plants and seed that you have in your fields to potentially reduce the potential for you to get resistance. So again, it's going to be an integrated approach. There's no doubt whatsoever. We can't develop a herbicide program once you get significant levels of resistance in your field. Our herbicide programs alone will not work. We know that. We've got 5 years of experience. It will not work. You will have to have an integrated approach. You'll have to look at different tillages, different cover crops, and then, of course, you'll have your herbicide program. Now, if we talk just about the herbicide programs, it gets extremely complicated. Are you conservation tillage, i.e., can we get the residual herbicide to the ground? Or are you conventional tillage? Are you irrigated? Can we activate that residual herbicide? If we can activate the residual herbicide and we can get it to the ground, we can do very well. If you're dry land, you're in the state of Georgia, you get about 3 or 4 days out of a month where you got a chance of getting it activated, we've got a major challenge, especially in conservation tillage where we can't plow and we don't do any tillage. And that's where we're getting essentially beaten by this pest. Now, when you think about herbicide systems, you guys are from many, many different areas. I'm not about to start talking specific herbicide or specific recommendations because I don't understand your soils and what have you. But there's no doubt residual herbicides across the cotton belt are critical in preventing or managing glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. Now, deciding which ones are the most effective for you is something you and your extension and your consultants, you guys need to determine for your soil type. In our part of the world, what we've done is we've determined which are the most effective residual herbicides, and then we have implemented them into programs to help preserve the technology that we've currently got. Now, with post-emergence options, generally today, we looked at the Roundup Ready technology, and you've got your Liberty Link or Ignite-based programs. If you're in my part of the world where we have resistance, this is just an example of 264 ounces of Weathermax when the Palmer was 5 inches, followed by another 264 ounces. And I think you can tell the difference between the treated and the non-treated. But for all practical purposes, where we have resistance, the glyphosate no longer is an effective option to control this tool. Now, obviously, it's great on the other 8 or 10 weeds that we've got in the field, but what's the number one problem we have? We've got to control that pest or we do not pick our cotton crop. There's no doubts about it. Now, we have been fortunate in our part of the world to be able to use staple. Now, I know a lot of places staple has not been that effective on pigweed. But unfortunately, we're now finding populations of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth that we've tried to manage with products like staple that we no longer are controlling, and we have what's called multiple resistance. And that means it's resistant to both glyphosate and the over 20 ALS herbicides we're currently using in our cropping systems. So this is a 44 ounces of Wellamax and 5 ounces of Staple when Palmer was 2 inches. This is 88 ounces and 10. This year we had to go up to 176 ounces and 15. So we've lost the ability, at least in a few of our fields, to use ALS chemistry or glyphosate on the same populations, and it's devastating for us. Now in that situation, the Ignite-based programs can be more effective. Again, if we've got irrigation, we can activate our residuals, Roundup Ready technology. If it produces the most cotton and the best quality for us, that's what we're doing. But in some areas, the Ignite-based programs are being used because they give us an opportunity. Now, is the Ignite-based program great? I'll be the first one to tell you, Ignite is not that good at all on pigweed. But compared to glyphosate on resistant pigweed or ALS chemistry on ALS-resistant pigweed, it at least gives our growers an opportunity. If you're in there at 2 to 3 inches, keep in mind we just talked about how fast this stuff grows. My grower swear it emerges as 2 inches. But if you go in as 2 to 3 inches, we can be very effective. But if it's 4 to 5 or 6 inches and we're not timely, the Ignite-based programs can have challenges as well. And that's what we're up against, and that's why the integrated approaches are going to be absolutely critical. We are adamant in our part of the world that our growers stay with conventional directed herbicide chemistry at lay-by. Now, why is this? If you're going over the top of a flex variety or something else, you're generally, weed control-wise, you're using glyphosate or you're using ALS chemistry, right? If you've got flex cotton and you're spraying topical, they're the two products of herbicide choice that you're predominantly using. What do you have the greatest challenges facing you in your future? Glyphosate resistance and ALS resistance. You need to continue to use this alternative chemistry at lay-by, and if you use that chemistry at lay-by, it has to be directed, whether it's Diron, Cotteran, Valor. We've got a tool of great products that need to be used at lay-by. Now, my final question for you guys is really one for me, and I'm curious. Your current use of MSMA at lay-by and cotton, are you guys not using it? Up to 25% of the acres that you represent, 25 to 50% of the acres you represent, or greater than 50% of the acreage. And the reason I'm asking this is we are facing a significant challenge with MSMA, and we've been fighting for 2 to 3 years to save this product. And we have a meeting with the EPA this weekend, and I just love to have these numbers. That's very interesting. All right, so most of you are not using MSMA, up to 25%, and then a 7 and 8%. I'm guessing the 7 and 8% are probably guys from areas where they have resistance. And my point with this is exactly what I wanted it to come out was, those areas where we don't have resistance, MSMA is not that critical, but once you get resistance, and it's resistant to glyphosate, MSMA is a critical component of a lay-by option for you, and it's critical that we preserve that technology to keep it for our growers in the future. And hopefully we'll be successful in that. Now, I'm getting ready to be quiet and move along, but I do want to make sure you guys, a couple of things that I think are essentially important, especially for most of you who do not have resistance. There's one economical option to managing glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth. That's prevention and early detection. You can run preventative programs using residual herbicides with a lot of the programs that industry offers now as economically as you can go out and spray Roundup 3 or 4 times. And I'm not suggesting Roundup isn't still very, very important and we still shouldn't use it, but you should protect it by using residual chemistry, in my part of the world, 2 to 3 times per season. If you catch a situation like on the left, this is what you're looking for. This is probably year one. You think about the seed production, you've got 1 to 2 years. You need to get off the tractor and go pull it up. If you don't pull it up, you're going to get in a situation that's something on the right that's so much more challenging to manage. Now, how are we, 24 counties in my state, probably 40 or 50 counties in my state, what are we doing to prevent the spread? Clearly, the adoption of residual herbicides in addition to the yellow. We've always used a lot of yellow herbicides, but we're using products in addition to that. That's the primary means that we're doing in areas to prevent or limit the spread of resistance. We also have growers that are using that mulch effect from conservation tillage, as well as we've got guys now that are very aware that this situation is something that's going to impact them, and they'll go out and cultivate those small spots that they missed, or they'll get off the tractors and go hand weed. And this is a summary from 7 or 8 of my counties, so this is where we're going, and for those of you who do not have resistance, this would be the most important impact you could ever have. If you wait and get in a situation like we got into, for example, in 2006, can you manage it? Yes, you can manage it. But you're looking at $100 per acre on the right-hand side. You cannot do it economically. You cannot get behind, and palm amaranth will absolutely leave you sitting still if you sit around and think it ain't going to happen to you or you'll deal with it when you get there. I can promise you, you want to be very preventive. So let me just summarize. Number one, hopefully I've convinced you, it's coming to see you. It might not be this year. It might not be next year, but it's coming to see you. You need to run preventative programs, and the preventative programs are not that much more costly by using some of these residual herbicides versus spraying a whole lot of a single compound. And then third thing, I want to encourage you to take the opportunity to go to a lot of the herbicide-resistant roundtables and workshops to gain all the knowledge you can, because the way we're going to win against resistance, I think, is actually understanding the pest you're going to fight. Because new herbicide chemistry, yes, it's coming in 2013 or 2014. It's not the answer. It's going to help, but it's not the answer. With that, I'll turn it over to Sandy.
Thanks, Stanley. We got a little bit of time for a couple of questions, if anybody has them for Stanley. Jesse?
His question was, with the new technology coming in 2013, 2014, but in my opinion only, it's not going to solve our problem. It'll help our problem. By that, what I'm referring to is if you look at dicamba-resistant cotton or you look at 2,4-D-resistant cotton, 2,4-D and dicamba, neither one, in my opinion, are extremely effective in controlling pigweed species, especially after they get bigger than 3 to 4 inches. Remember, we're out here used to killing stuff 2 foot tall with glyphosate. So what they will do in a systems approach, they'll definitely improve our ability to control it, but it's not going to be like 1997 when we come in with Roundup and we're killing everything as big as we are. So it offers us more opportunity, but it's not going to come in to save you. So the mentality, if I have a grower, I can sit back and I can wait for that to come, it's going to save me. It's not going to save me. It's going to help us manage it, but it's not going to be a savior. We need to get to that new technology with as little infestation of glyphosate-resistant palm amaranth as possible. Now, I did want to say I'm trying all kinds of things, I promise. If you can see the cotton rows, it's hard to get that horse not to step on that cotton. Any other questions? That's a joke, by the way. Well, he does, but the pigweed keeps right on growing, picks him up.
Thank you, Dr. Culpepper.